Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is a Design for Living Big Book meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Hannah B, and I am a compulsive overeater and your chairperson today. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. We start this meeting by remembering our common purpose, to extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer. Let us be mindful of OA's unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences, yet unites us in the solution to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Today, we are delighted to have Joanne joining us to share her experience, strength, and hope, focused on the topic of Step 4, Part 2. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Hannah, and thank you, everyone. My name is Joanne, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm very, very grateful to be here. And our focus here today is Step 4, Part 2. So we've broken Step 4 into two parts, once a month, coming together, looking at the steps. And today, our focus will be around fear, our sex inventory, and shame, and how these inventories can block us. This work can block us, and we do the work to get free, because I'm blocked from that sunlight of the spirit. I'm baffled, and I do it again, and I can't seem to get out of the cycle of this behavior. So today we're going to be doing some work and looking at that, and I want to take a moment to do a prayer for myself. And I usually lean in and change the words, but I'll do a screen share just to guide me in what to say. A set-aside prayer. Calling on that spirit, that inner voice for me. As I understand that to be that spirit, please, God, set aside everything I think I know about you. Everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, everything I think I know about recovery today. Please open my heart and mind for a new experience. And you'll see on the word, these words on the screen, and you'll notice I change the words. I change the words to the set-aside prayer every time I say them. And that's to keep myself awake, because I fall asleep. And I try to stay awake in this moment. So my name is Joanne, and on the screen in a moment, when it moves on, you will see Bill W. And he's my focus this year, this image. And in those of you listening, it says, don't make a project out of working the steps. Go through your day being the sort of person you would like to be, trying to help someone else and making sure you don't hurt anyone. And when you get to the end of the day, review the 12 steps and you will find that you have worked all of them. Every day, whether we like it or not, whether we're aware or not, whether we're one day sober, abstinent, clean, or whether we've been around for 42 years, every day we work all 12 steps. We just don't always do a very effective job. And when we focus and when we practice, and what Bill W. did was he laid out a path from the information he was getting from the people that were around him. He laid out a path of living. A Design for Living is the name of this group where we're meeting today. That's what was laid out in these 12 steps. And when we focus and when we study, that's what we have, a Design for Living. My journey, very briefly, for those that haven't seen me before or met me before, welcome. And coming to this group and coming to this community, I have been interested in food from probably from birth. My parents tell me lots of interesting stories around food and my behavior and games that I used to play, where the object of the game was to finish the entire loaf. Oh, that was like a loaf of food. And that was the game, to see who could eat the most. I always won. Like, I always won in my community. That was just the game. And those were my childhood games, were around food. And coming into program, I started to have other issues. At 11 years old, I had started having panic attacks and couldn't move. Like, can't move. Just can't move. I'm 11. I didn't tell anyone until I was about 22. So for those years in the middle, I'm using food and I'm using other substances or behaviors to cope with anxiety, to cope with living. I have to get out the door. I have to manage my life, and food was a way of numbing that anxious heart. So today, just before the meeting, I can't work the chat. I can't work Zoom. I don't quite know everything. No, nothing's where it's meant to be. And my heart starts to race. And in the old days, that was it. That was the, like, I don't, I'm overwhelmed. I can't cope. And food is a numbing agent. It's how I manage to cope. The problem isn't the food. The problem isn't the food. The food was my solution. I faced problems every day. I continue to face problems every day. 5 minutes ago, I faced a problem because I couldn't use the chat. Here I am on Zoom and I can't figure out how to use it. The technology overwhelms me and I'm facing life and I don't know how to cope. Food is a way of coping. It was my solution. These steps and this method of going through the steps and learning and growing and leaning in is a way that I found that I could cope without turning to the food. I can cope today leaning into spirit, leaning into my inner resource. And I do that today by closing my eyes and breathing. And remembering that I'm not alone. Inside me today is an inner resource. Appendix number two of that big book guides us how to find your inner resource. It will look different to mine. And that's what makes each of us miraculous, that we can have our own journey and our own expression of each of these steps. My addiction looks different to the person next to me. I have also have issues with media and issues with other substances, and my sponsor doesn't. One of my sponsor, I have a sponsor in a people related program, and she can eat a sandwich, no problem. Right? But I can't. I mean, my food we each have different food plans, and we each have different journeys that we have in this program. As we walk through this program, my sponsor and her journey is a guide around food, but I have my own journey of learning what is my program going to be, what am I turning to as a solution to living. And whatever I'm turning to, if it's not that inner resource, it's blocking me from effective living. It's blocking me, perhaps it could be blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. So I hear myself going through identification, and I breathe in and breathe out, and let's just begin with the rest of the work. Don't make a project out of working the steps. And that's irony because I make a project out of everything. I get overexcited about everything and I do make a project out of everything. So I'm reminded here that every day, each of us work all 12 steps, every single day. And here is a chance for us to lean in, and we're looking at fear, our sex conduct, and shame. These are tricky subjects. Let's have a look. I will briefly have a look at the first few steps, steps 1, 2, and 3. We were powerless over alcohol. In this community, it would be food. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. And I break that up. The body, the mind, the will. We were powerless over food. That gets broken into two parts. The doctor's opinion described it. Once I start, I cannot stop. I have one and I have 21. I can't stop until the packet, the box, the bag, the fridge is empty. I cannot stop. Once I start, I cannot stop. That's an allergy of the body. I don't break out in hives. I break out in more. I need more. And even if I don't get more, I need it. I have that itchy feeling in my body. I just need more. That's the allergy, the physical allergy. The mind. We admitted we were powerless over food. It affects our body. It affects our mind. I can stop for a week or a month or a few days. I have a period of abstinence. And then the thought occurs to me, just one won't hurt me. I can handle it. In the big book, what it was, Jim, one won't hurt me on a full stomach. Whiskey in the milk. If I have the whiskey in the milk, it won't hurt me. So the mind comes in. We were powerless over our minds. Our minds tell us things. For me, it tells me just one won't hurt. I'll start on Monday. I'll just finish what's in the fridge and then I'll begin. That my mind tells me things like this. And I'm powerless over that. And then our lives have become unmanageable. So that unmanageability shows up in my life where I keep trying to fix things. I keep trying to live on my power, self-reliance. That shows up in my life today. And I just did a scan of my life and thought, what are some examples to share? The beds are not made. The dishes are not done. The kids are crying. I can't get to work. I damage my body. Unhappy, depressed, anxiety, rage. These are symptoms, my unmanageability showing up. It's a guide to let me know that I'm using self-reliance once again. It's what I do. Self-reliance is where I go to. This is the doctor's opinion, and we sit in self-reliance going round and round and round and round. There's an image on the screen, the doctor's opinion, that cycle, the addiction cycle. We go around and around and around, holding on, trying to manage and control our lives. And maybe we put down one thing, like maybe I'll put down a particular food in this fellowship, but I'm going to hold on to this other food because I'm going to manage. Or maybe we're in a particular food plan and it just doesn't suit our bodies, but we get stuck holding on. We get stuck in self-reliance, thinking the food plan is the power. The higher power becomes the food plan. The higher power becomes the sponsor. We get stuck, perhaps not in self-reliance, but reliance on a food plan or reliance on my sponsor. I have to control and manage and do what they want for me to be okay. Whatever we put in there, whatever I need for me to be okay, is something perhaps that stands in the way of my connection to that inner resource. It stands in the way to that emotional sobriety, to that balance that we're looking for. What we're looking for is reliance on something different to get out of that hamster wheel. And any moment we can make a choice. And then this is leading us into step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. When I recognize that I'm beyond human power, that a better partner, that a better job, that a better government, that a better health that my body, if only I had a healthy body, then I would be okay. If when I'm ready to let go of all of that, when I recognize I'm powerless, came to believe that a power, where and how can I find some other power? And we find out, each of us are on a journey, we find our power, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So we lean into that. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We let go of self-reliance. We have to do this every day, many, many times a day, but how? A change in the way we think, feel, and behave. Many, many times a day, we make a choice and we lean in. We realize I've gone into self-reliance, and that's okay because that's what I do. But just for today, I'm going to make another choice. I made a choice in the morning, but I have to make another choice. Many times a day, we're faced with a choice. We have this opportunity to lean in and change the way we think, feel, and behave. This is the transformation. Letting go of self-reliance, letting go of self-help. It takes courage. And that leads into that serenity prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the things we cannot change. The things I cannot change, this anxiety that I had, the obesity that I had. At 24, I was trying to get the numbers straight in my head. I did actually write them down the other day. I was at 24, I was obese. I was stuck in my house. I couldn't get myself out the door. I couldn't get to the letterbox. The daily anxiety, the daily panic, the daily inability to move. Overwhelm. Just unable to manage. Here, I'm powerless. Serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change my powerlessness. Courage to change the things I can. What can I do today? What can I do today? The proper use of the will is what that big book says. We do have ferocious willpower. I just can't use it against my addiction. I will always lose. So the proper use of the will is showing up to workshops like this and having a pen in my hand and approaching inventory. Perhaps the proper use of the will is to go for a walk. Perhaps the proper use of the will is to pray. What's the proper use of the will for me today? I don't know. Serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change the past. I can't change my physical nature, this nervousness, this inner ability to my desire to go to self-reliance. I can't change that. But what can I do? Courage to change the things I can. For me, the courage to lean in one more time to this power, this inner resource. I can't. You can. God can. And today I let go of trying to do it my way. And I lean in steps 1, 2, and 3. I have an image on the screen of self-reliance. It's a car going down the road with square wheels. If you were here last week or last month, you would have seen it. Bumpity, bumpity, bump. We damage the road that we're on. Holding on, and my vehicle may fall apart. That's my body. My body may fall apart, and I don't know if I'm going to get to my destination. I have an image on the screen, self-reliance, and I imagine a truck. It can, it's very useful. It can carry a load. The difference is it goes perhaps a little slower. The wheels are round on this vehicle, and the difference here is I'm listening in this vehicle to the GPS, that positioning system where I pause and I listen. What is the healthy thing for me to do today? And I listen again. What is the healthy thing for me to do today? And I'm willing to course correct. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to let go of the steering wheel. I don't let go completely. I still have to drive, but I'm not holding on so tight to the way that I think it should be. I let go of the shoulds. I should be able to speak more coherently. I should be able to handle Zoom. I should be able to present a calm facade. I should be at what are the shoulds? I should be able to handle this or that. Let go of the shoulds today, and today I listen and I pray today, every day, multiple times. I lean in, or I need to. That took us to step three, where we're looking at this choice, made a decision every day to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Each of us are going to have a different understanding. Every day, multiple times a day, we face a choice. The mundane things, we bring the Spirit in. What is the healthy thing for me to do today? And this brings us up to step four. So steps one, two, and three, I'm powerless. Our focus in this meeting is food, but it flows into my relationships, my family, my work, my community. I'm powerless, and I see it every day in the way that I approach food. I'm powerless. I'm powerless over my emotional nature. I'm powerless over my fears, my anxieties. Today, looking at fear. Today, looking at our sex conduct. Today, looking at shame. Perhaps it's interesting that I start today being exposed to my own fear and exposed to my own shame and exposed to these conduct issues. Perhaps it's reminding me every day I'm reminded that I bumble through and that's okay. It's okay for me to bumble through today. I don't need to be perfect. My need for me to be better than I am is part of my disease, and it leads to me not being able to function, to getting overwhelmed and using in this unhealthy way that I do. So step four, I was taught to break step four into four parts: resentment, fear, our sex conduct, and secrets, our shame. These are the four parts that I do in extended column work. Last month, we looked at resentments. I think I have an image in here. So this is what it looks like with the resentments. We looked at resentments last month. The example I gave you was Claire. Claire didn't invite me to her 30th birthday party. So I had a resentment. And I thought, that's wonderful. I'm going to experiment. I'm going to write up a worksheet. And what we do is we break our resentments into these seven parts. They're from the big book: self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, gender relations, pocketbook. We break it up and we write it out. I am. And this first part is our self, is our assets. What am I? I may not have connection to them right at this moment that I'm writing it, but that first part of the self-esteem is looking for the positive view of who I am. The example on the screen: I am a loyal, helpful, passionate, fun-loving friend and person. What's my fear? I'm unapproachable. I'm dull. People don't get me. I'm unlovable. I will be rejected. I am rejected. And we look at the pride. Others should see Claire. I'm at work and I work with this woman, Claire. Others should see Claire treating me as a dear friend, cherished, valued, up on a pedestal, her favorite person. I am exaggerating a little bit, but this is like a wish. What do I want people to see when they look at how Claire treats me? And what's my fear? People are going to see Claire doesn't respect me. People are going to see that I'm a doormat, that she walks all over me. What am I afraid people will see when they look at this relationship with Claire? What am I afraid people will see? Now, I went through this, I introduced this last month, but the reason it's still here is look at today. I wanted to introduce it because this work leads into the fear. Because if you look at this worksheet, the column going down the right, these are all my fears. I'm unapproachable. I'm dull. People don't get me. I'm unlovable. People will see that she doesn't like me. She only pretended to like me. I will never be okay. I will feel empty. People take me for granted. People pretend to be my friend. I will never meet healthy people. I will never, never meet healthy women at work. I will always be bullied by women at work. Perhaps healthy men at work don't exist. Right? I will always feel alone. I will never feel financially stable. I will never, what's that last one? I will never feel safe at work. So when we start this inventory work, we often start with resentments. It's usually more accessible to beginners when we're starting out. We're quite aware of the irritations and the rage and the content of that. So when we approach our work, we start with resentments. And in doing that, we identify fear. Now, what do I do with that fear? So that's what we're looking at now. So we've done this work. We've written the resentment worksheet, and that brings us to a fear. So moving on, this would be the work that we've done. We've done a lot of work. Maybe there's new fears that come up. This is the column four. So this is the extension of the resentment work on the screen. And you'll see there's two questions in here talking about fear. On towards the bottom here, question number eight on the worksheet on the screen in front of you, it says, list any additional fears. This is an interesting one. Sometimes people do the work and they start to get a sense of there's going to be an amends in here. I may have to make an amends. And so that's a fear not related to the person. It's related now to the future. I don't want to have to ever see this person again. I don't want to have to ever say sorry. I don't want to have to do anything in the future. These are future fears. And they're legitimate. And I'm going to tell you, you don't have to. And sometimes that's the healthy thing. Don't place yourself in harm's way thinking I was just going to control the steps. It's not always healthy to go and approach these people from our past and do this amends. It's never, I believe, healthy to do an amends by ourselves without wise guidance. To jump ahead, we can harm others, we can harm ourselves. But the fear comes up. I don't want to have to deal with them. I don't want to have to make amends. I don't want to see them ever again. And so writing out these fears to give a voice to the fear. There's an image sometimes that I use of an anchor. I don't have a picture of it, but of an anchor where I'm holding on to this fear now. Imagine a fear. I'm holding on to a fear, and that fear is an anchor, and I'm in the ocean and I'm drowning. I need to let go. And this is the inventory work. It helps me to release. First, I have to identify. That's the method of the steps. The first step is to see there's a problem. That's what happens with each of these inventories, to recognize there's a problem with the fear. I'm holding on. The solution is to let go of that self-reliance. We don't need to do it by ourselves anymore. Lean in. And make space for that power, the higher power, your inner resource. So fear, I will move through this, but if you open your big books to page 68, If you want to take a moment, I've got the paragraph on the screen, but if you want to open your big books, page 68, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. So from this paragraph, the part that I want to identify here is the sentence that says, we asked ourselves why we had them. The method that I was taught and what I teach is extended column work. So we take each of these inventories and we extend it. We write it out. So that phrase there, we asked ourselves why we had them. That is where we're moving to now with the fear. We asked ourselves why we had them. So I've got some examples on the screen and I use these examples in workshops. Why, these are examples of doing what I would call a fear train. So we start at the top. People don't like me. And you ask yourself, why? What would happen if that were true? We're using that question. Why do we have them? Why do we have this fear? So what would happen if that were true? People don't like me. The example on the screen, people won't want to be around me. Okay, well, what would happen if that were true? I will be alone. I'll be all alone. What would happen if that were true? I will be miserable. I will feel overwhelmed. What would happen if that were true? I will self-destruct. I will use, I will pick up in my disease. I will to avoid feeling anything. What would happen if that were true, Joe? What will happen if I pick up, if I use? I will suffer in my disease. You know what will happen if I pick up? What's my fear? I will divorce my family. I will leave. I will want to be alone. That's all I want when I'm using. All I want is to be alone. To be alone, to put the blinds down, cover the curtains, close the door and use. That's all I want. What would happen if that were true? I will suffer. I will damage my body. What will happen if that were true? I will reject everyone and everything, and maybe I will want to die. So that perhaps is this core fear. I will be alone. I will want to die, maybe. I will suffer. Maybe there's a core fear around being rejected. So we do these fear trains. And the reason for me, I use this word fear train, and I think I have an image of it in there just to help, just for me. I'm a hobby around this, teaching these steps. And for me, what happens in my mind is that I go from people don't like me. I go from that top fear and I do an express train all the way down to I will be alone in a room, suffering, depressed, unable to get out of that red bed, unable to move. Obesity, I've been there. I know what it's like. I will be there again. So I go from this slight fear, like someone's looking at me in the wrong way, and I do an express train right down to the bottom where I'm alone, suffering, and wanting to die. I do an express train. This is my fear. This is what the method that goes on in my mind. So we ask ourselves why we have them. The big book says that's asking us to look at not just the fear. Why do we have it? And I use the extended column work on fears, the same as we did with resentment. I ask the same questions. What's my self-seeking behavior? So I have an example on the screen. If my fear is I will be alone, I will be rejected. It's a common fear for me, comes up often. So it's one of those express stations where I go, I start with, you're looking at me funny, and bang, in my head, I go down to that fear. It could have actually happened today. I couldn't use the Zoom. I couldn't use the technology here. In my head is that express train. And I get straight on it and go down to the bottom. I will be rejected. I will be alone. I will be in that obesity, physically suffering, and I will never get out. And that can happen with the slightest thing where I couldn't use the Zoom. It's just that express train goes on in my head. Writing it out gives me a chance to get free. That's what inventory is, a chance to see what is going on in my mind and a chance to write a new story, to get free, to have a new vision of who I can be. And that is what inventory leads me towards, a new vision of who I can be today. So if I have this fear that I'm alone, there's a question, why do I have it? Right? Why do I have it? Now, this is a question for me, the answer, why do I have it? This question of being rejected and alone, why do I have it? I was rejected. I was alone. And I was let down by people who should have been protecting me, perhaps. Right? I have a history of being rejected. I have a history of being alone. My fear of being suffering alone in obesity and being unable to cope, being unable to get out of the house, I have that memory. I've been there. So why do I have it? I've been there. This particular fear, not all my fears. I haven't been to all, like I haven't experienced all those fears, but sometimes, why do I have it? Because I've been there before and I'm holding on to it. So that there is just identifying where it comes from. In 12 step, we don't delve more into that. That might need outside help. But I'm acknowledging it's there. This is beyond sponsorship. That might need more help. Set aside prayer. Remembering often we do a set aside prayer. So let's do one now. Please, please set aside. I lean in my spirit. I pray to be free of this fear, to live a life that is full of joy and wonder. Help me to be free. Self-seeking behavior. So we ask ourselves questions. When I feel this fear of being rejected and alone, what do I do? And I looked at my behavior specific to this fear, and it came to me that I reject people. Before they get close to me, I reject them. I turn my back on people. I isolate. I turn on the TV. I hide in my room. In the food fellowships, I would eat. I would eat alone and not leave my house, not leave my room. What is the payoff to this fear, to living in fear? You know what the payoff is I get to eat. I don't have to get out of the door. I don't have to deal with you. I don't have to bumble through life. Sometimes I embrace that today. I do bumble, and today that's okay. It's not always graceful, but today am I willing to love myself even if I bumble? Like, can you embrace yourself with self-care? Step three came to, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care. It's not over to nothing or over to punishment or over to perfection. It's over to the care of that power, that inner resource, as you see it, as you understand it to be. When I feel this fear, what do I do? What happens to my behavior? I go into self-pity, I go into self-isolate, and I reject people because I'm afraid they're going to reject me, so I reject them. I don't turn up. Selfish thinking, self-pity, self-abandon, self-reliance. Delusional thinking. So these are the same questions we interrogated ourselves in with around resentment. And I use the same format just to help me to see how it's the same. Delusional. That fear will keep me safe. That hiding in my room will keep me safe. I'm not safe. It's a very slow, miserable death. The death in the food fellowship is slow and miserable. Takes 20 years. We get cut off from health. We get cut off from community. We get cut off from our inner voice, that inner spirit. The fear that that isolating is enough in life, a delusion that I can fix my life if only I try hard enough. That throwing myself into unsafe relationships is the best I can do. That I can manage my addictions, that they are not that bad. That I can manage my food. That this food plan is the one for me. This is the solution. This is the food plan. That this sponsor is the solution. Character defects is listed here. Perhaps always when you're looking at fear, consider self-reliance as just a standard. When I'm engaging in fear, I'm pretty much always engaging in self-reliance. There's something going on there. The solution isn't self-reliance. For me, the solution is reliance on something other than self, that power, that mystery, that inner resource. In this example of fear, the fear of rejection, it tied into people. So there was codependency there as a character defect and sloth. I don't know. I don't remember what this was written exactly to, but that's what came up. Every time we do a worksheet, it will change. What we write will change. Why do I hold on to this fear? It keeps me in my disease. It helps me to stay in my room. I don't have to go to work. Perhaps I hold on to this fear because it's the only thing that gets me out the door. It's the only thing that gets me out the door in the morning. I use it to manage myself and my anxiety. Maybe I use this fear to manage me, to keep myself and my life the way I think it should be. Why do I hold on to this fear? There is a payoff to living in fear. And until I could see the payoff, I couldn't change my behavior. The payoff for me, my personal journey of living in fear, the payoff was I didn't have to reach out for help. The payoff was I didn't have to look like a bumbling person. I don't like looking like a bumbling person sometimes. I don't like to fumble. And if I live in my fear, I never speak to anyone, so I never have to fumble. It's like having a tooth rotting in my mouth. And instead of going to the dentist and getting some help with that tooth, I chew on the other side of my mouth or I just stop eating entirely. So the problem isn't solved. I'm just avoiding the problem. The fear keeps me using other solutions. It keeps me in self-reliance. Name the opposite of the fear. Oh, actually, keep staying on that question there. Why do I hold on to the fear? I just missed some points there because this is talking about relationships. And a lot of my food and a lot of my anxiety and a lot of my behavior around food, it stemmed from I just can't handle people. So here, what's the payoff to the fear? It keeps me safe from being rejected. It keeps me and being unsafe with people I can't say no to. So if I'm not setting healthy boundaries, my fear will set a boundary for me because I don't get out the door. I don't turn up. I can't say no to that event or that person. No problem. I don't even turn up. My fear helps me set boundaries anyway, right? And they're not the boundaries I want to be setting. Because I also don't show up to weddings. I don't show up to birthdays. I don't show up to work. I don't show up to the people I love. I don't show up to my kids. I was raising two kids and, you know, this recovery work, I'm very grateful to be today, one day at a time in a healthy, loving partnership, in a relationship. And be raising two beautiful teenagers now. They're not always beautiful. Teenagers are hard work. That should be on the box, like when you buy teenagers, they're hard work. You know, they're young adults and they are They're finding their own way in life. And just for today, can I be okay with that? Can I be okay with life not being as what it should be? It just is. The payoff to fear is I can avoid conflict. I'm just in my room hiding. So the fear, there's a payoff to living in fear. What would the opposite be? So name the opposite. And here it talks about principles, guiding values and beliefs. Perhaps it might be trust in this inner voice, this inner resource, leaning into that, letting go of self-reliance for me. I see that. Am I willing to pause? Am I willing to pray? Am I willing to lean in and listen for guidance? And I hear that guidance in meetings. I hear that guidance from professionals, counselors, doctors. I might hear guidance and listen, because at the end of the day, I need to actually take the wisdom from many different sources and navigate what is healthy for me. I have health issues that come and go. And at the moment, I'm grateful to be in a healthy place in my body today. But I've had doctors many times tell me I can eat ice cream, like go and eat, you can eat all this stuff. And they give me a food plan because I'm going in for a procedure, and they tell me these are the foods you can eat. So I look at the foods I can eat, and I look at that food, and I have to then go to my sponsor, my food sponsor, and say, hey, this is what my doctor says. I don't feel comfortable with all these foods. What do you think about navigating life? There's a trusting these resources that we have. And then we lean in, what behavior would this manifest? What behavior would it be if I had healthy boundaries? What behavior would it be if I was leaning into my food and my food sponsorship with listening ears? It took me many years to recognize I have a problem with bread. I don't normally talk about foods in meetings. And, it took me many years to recognize if I have a problem with a loaf where a serving size is the entire thing, that flat bread is still a problem. Like in my mind, it was different. In my mind, it was different. And it took a long time for me to recognize to let it go. It took me a long time to change. What behavior would this manifest? So what you're asking is, if I had trust, if I had healthy boundaries, what would the difference be? And you look for specific behaviors. Perhaps in this example on the screen, healthy bedtimes, healthy meetings. This was around media issues coming up. Healthy meditation, attend a community, social gathering once a month. So this is around isolation. If I'm isolating, the healthy behavior isn't to work harder at my steps. The solution is to get some support to get out of the isolation. What social groups are you part of? What fun activities are you engaging in today with others? If the issue is poor boundaries, what support are you getting with health, facing those boundaries and creating healthy boundaries? So the behavior that would manifest is maybe having difficult conversations with people. Like challenging the fear. And we do that in sponsorship in the rest of the steps. So we don't do it alone. On page 69, we talk about sex. Sex conduct. It says now about sex. And it's always interesting in the work when we get to that part of the book. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where had we been at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. So that's page 69 of the big book. This is perhaps where most of the work for the sex conduct, writing it down, comes from. I use, again, I put it up into a worksheet. So starting with three questions before we get started, and this comes again from that big book. How did the situation begin? I met them at work. How did the situation, I met them online. So I'm online. How did you meet this relationship? What happened? It was fabulous for 2 weeks and then what happened? And then there was a disaster. Something happened, something, you know, it wasn't healthy. Or what happened? It was 2 years. Maybe it was a long time and it was unhealthy the whole time. What happened? So how did it begin? What happened? And where is it now? Right now I'm stalking them on Facebook, but I haven't talked to them for 2 years, but I'm following them on Facebook. Where is this relationship now? So you look at what happened. How did the encounter begin? How did the relationship begin? What happened and where is it now? So that's a way of us just getting into very briefly the run up, what happened with this relationship. And then you ask questions that come from that paragraph we just said. Where had I been selfish? Where had I been dishonest? Where had I been inconsiderate? Whom had I hurt? Did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? Where was I at fault? A lot of those questions for me, I didn't arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness. So you just write none, none, none. I didn't do that. Where had I been selfish? Maybe I just wanted someone on my side. I just wanted someone. I didn't really care that. I didn't really care for them. I didn't really like a lot of things about them. I just didn't want to be alone. That's selfish. I didn't really like their hobbies or their behavior or their job or anything. I didn't really like them. I just didn't want to be alone. That's hard sometimes to look at. Where had I been dishonest? I pretended to like what they were doing, but I didn't like it. I didn't like their politics. I didn't like I didn't like their job. Right? I didn't, but I pretended. So when we come down, so some of these questions, maybe you have done something, so you do have to look at it. If you have done something within the relationship, do look at it, but don't be afraid to say, no, 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 I didn't do any of those things in this time. In the past I have, but this time I didn't. Where was I at fault? This is asking for character defects, and maybe you recognize self-abandon. Maybe you recognize selfish thinking, perhaps selfish behavior. Maybe it's just I didn't say no. Or maybe where was I at fault? Don't be too tough on yourself. Maybe the fault was I didn't. Maybe there was no fault. Maybe you did everything in a healthy way. Maybe just the fault is not letting go, like holding on to the grief. Right? Don't we do have to practice, and sometimes we need sponsor guidance not to get into self-loathing, self-harm. Maybe that's the fault. Today, nothing went on in that relationship. I did everything I could in a healthy way, but today I haven't let it go, and I'm living in self, going round and round in my mind that I'm not letting it go. I'm not moving forward. Maybe that's where I'm at fault today. Sometimes we do need to be creative and look at that. If we did behavior that wasn't great, am I willing to write about it, think about it, and look at where was I at fault? And the next question, what should I have done instead? These come straight from that paragraph on page 69. What should I have done instead? This is a chance. So I am getting ready to wind up for questions, and I hope I haven't overloaded people with information. There is a lot of information here. I'm coming in a moment to vision statements and then to shame. And then I'll close up my part and open up for questions. Please do hang around, ask questions. There is a lot in what has been said. What should I have done instead is a chance for us to look at if I could go, I can't change the past, right? I can't. But if I could go back and do it again, what would I do different? What would I do differently? Maybe I would have said no right away. I had an inkling something wasn't healthy right at the beginning, and I ignored it. So maybe what I should have done is said no. Or it's the opposite. Maybe what I should have done is said yes. I should have gone on that date. I should have gone to that event. Maybe I should have said yes. Right? What if I could go back in time, what would I do differently? Now, these worksheets, you do at them again and again and again. You do a few of them so that you can see a pattern. Maybe you have a pattern of anorexic behavior around relationships where we shut down and we control to stay safe. And when you see the pattern, it opens up the door for something new. When we look at powerlessness, it opens the door for power, that inner resource power. If I keep trying to hold on, it's self-reliance. And when I bring self-reliance into my love life and into my relationships with all people, platonic, my community, when I use this worksheet on my work colleagues, you can use this worksheet on family members. You can extend the worksheet to look at the same behavior with siblings. This is a behavior. This starts with your intimate partner relationships, but you can use it in siblings, in work. You can use it with all relationships. Where had I been selfish? Where had I created jealousy? Where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? And when you start to see the patterns in your relationships, in the food fellowships, we have that anorexic, like the shutting down control behavior. We also have the binging, the overdoing. And that was often my behavior. So I was either shut down or binging in relationships, like just go to the races. So what should I have done instead? And it created a vision. When I saw the pattern, it created a vision statement for me. And the big book calls them ideal self. We lean in from this inventory, from the resentment, the fear, and the sex inventory, we build an ideal. We're not there yet, but we start right now. You start building an ideal self. And I have some examples from people that I've worked with before, I think, and I've put them on the screen. Here are some examples. I am the father who listens. From all this work, this becomes a prayer. This becomes a mantra. This becomes a vision of who I can become. Before I move on with the work, there's more work to do. There's more steps to do. But now I have a vision. I am the person who accepts their fear today. I pause. I connect. I proceed. I am the woman who initiates healthy conversation and boundaries at work. So these ideal self, these statements, they come when you do inventory and you see your resentment, you see your fear, you see your sex conduct, and you start to see who you could become, the opposite. That's still you. I am the person who sets healthy boundaries today. I am accountable for my sleep, self-care. You could also say in this fellowship, in this food fellowship, I am the person who sets healthy boundaries today. And in brackets, I often get people to be specific. So what would healthy boundaries be around food? I'm willing to ask what's in the food when I go to restaurants. I am the woman who sets healthy boundaries. I make my own food. That's a boundary today. So find what is your vision statement from all this work. So that's what we do. We do this work. We find a vision for who we could become. And often that comes from some of this work that we do. And moving on. Before we go to do a fifth step, there's one more inventory that needs to be done. And that's around secrets, around our shame, and around our dishonesty. We're building an archway, and I think I have the quote in here somewhere. There it is, on page 75. Carefully reading. Now, the quote actually comes after we've done our step work, after we've approached the sponsor, and we've done a fifth step. But I get people to review it before they come to us to do a fifth step. Before you do your fifth step, you want to make a note of any secrets. You don't have to share them with your sponsor. It's not always healthy to share them with your sponsor. They're not a professional person. The secret might need legal help. It might need like a psychologist, or it might need some specialty help. But you can say to your sponsor, I've got an issue in this area and I'm going to get some help. Can you keep me accountable for that? And maybe the sponsor can be an accountability that you're getting more help because you have an issue. So it's leaning in. The page 75, the reading is carefully reading the first five proposals. We asked if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? So the instructions, and I'll close with this, the instructions are to review before you approach your sponsor, review all of the work you've done, review the resentments, review the fear, review the sex inventory, have a look at it all, and then think to yourself in a real meditation, in a quiet time, is there anything that hasn't come up? Is there anything that I haven't written yet? Is there anything missing? Because there are things in my life that I don't have an anger around. I don't have resentment. I'm not actively, well, I didn't write about it in my fear inventory. I might have some fear, but I didn't write about it. And it doesn't have anything to do with my sex inventory. The sex inventory is behavior that I engage in. I chose to do it. For some of us, there's behavior that goes on. There's events that goes on that I didn't choose. And I carry the shame and I carry the secret. Is there anything missing? So the instruction is to write down one word as a prompt. Don't write it all out again. Just one word as a prompt so that you can have a choice on how to move forward with this, how to let it go. The secret and the shame could be something, the final thing that's holding us back from moving forward. So, I'm finishing today with a prayer. This is a prayer that was written by someone doing this work, and they took their vision of who they could become, and they took their vision of that power, their power, and this was the words, and they gave me permission to share it today. Today, I pause, inhale, exhale. I call on power for a spiritual solution using prayer, meditation, 12 steps of recovery, and this present moment. Today, I speak up with each breath. I honor my path through simple words and actions. Today, I lovingly detach. I am responsible for my behaviors. What is the loving thing to do today? Today, I rest in the power of this moment. Today, I pause, inhale, exhale. So thank you, everyone. And there was a lot of information in there. And I will close with I am someone who has had clinical diagnoses of all sorts of things, anxiety, nervousness, depression, binge eating disorder, and agoraphobia, like this inability to get out of my house and to speak, like all these numbers and letters after my name. They're not always good. Right? There's the letters after our name. And tomorrow I'm heading on a plane to the US, right? Getting on a plane to come to travel, which is wonderful. to do some, to meet with some fellows and to do some work and to breathe in and breathe out. And I, this life that we have that can be different to the life that it was, one day at a time, where I can show up and be of service and have a family, have a community, have people that I show up for. So I want to say thank you so much for the time, and thank you for allowing me to bumble through again. And I hand over to Hannah.
Thank you so much, Jo, for sharing all your experience, strength, and hope. So we'll now be transitioning into a question and answer segment, and I'd like to introduce our moderator, Debbie. Thanks, Debbie.
Thanks so much, Hannah. Hello, my name is Debbie, and I'm a compulsive eater and your moderator for today. And Joanne, our first question is this presentation and the worksheets on the AD4L website, or can people get them somehow?
Yes. So the worksheets will be available. I have them printed, but I gave them to our chair for the meeting, and I think she's maybe, oh, she is on the telephone. I can see her now. So in answer to the question, the PowerPoint presentation will be available in the chat if you can give me a moment. And the recording is available on a Design for Living recording resources page, so you'll have access to that. I do think I bumbled a bit today, so it may not be the best representation of this work, but we just show up and we do it again and we do it again and let go of trying to be smooth every time. Maybe I do it again. Maybe this was a practice because I'm going to be doing something similar in the US and this was a chance for me to practice. So thank you for that opportunity. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you. Another question is, I have trouble sometimes identifying what is the payoff, especially for a fear. How is it a payoff when it causes me so much suffering?
Yeah, it's a great question. It does cause us suffering. So think of the tooth, the rotten tooth, and the solution is to go to the dentist, but I don't want to go to the dentist. I don't want to go to the dentist. And so instead, I chew on the other side of my mouth, like I don't eat, or I just turn to liquid food or something, but I just can't get myself to the dentist. The payoff to the fear is I don't have to go to the dentist. So for example, if I'm afraid of conflict, the payoff to that fear is I don't have to engage in conflict. I don't have to say no. I don't have to be responsible for my finances. Maybe I can just be irresponsible. It gives me permission to continue the way that I am. I don't have to change. I don't have to look at my behavior. I just can keep doing whatever I'm doing. The fear keeps me in whatever cycle I'm in, and I don't have to change. A lot of this inventory work will be seeing. So for example, that vision, I am the father who listens. That person who said that and gave me permission to share it, that was a fear inventory that came from. So I'm afraid for my child, my adult child who's making poor choices. And she was making poor choices. But my fear kept me yelling at her because I was so fearful when I saw her. It gave me permission to yell. And recognizing my fear is causing a rift between my daughter and myself. Today, I am the father who listens. Today, the payoff to the fear. So a lot of our defects of character, a lot of the actions that we take, the payoff is it releases the valve inside of us like a volcano. We're holding on to these emotions. And when I act out, it feels good. It feels good to yell. Anyone had that experience when you yell at someone and you feel good? It's not great for relationships, I can tell you, right? It's not good, but it feels good to release the pain. So for that example, I am the father who listens. It's not going to be comfortable. It's not going to be comfortable when your daughter is making choices and you see those choices and you're uncomfortable. You're going to feel uncomfortable. Are you ready to feel uncomfortable? That's hot. That's the payoff is I don't have to deal with my uncomfortability. Another thing that you can say is short-term gain for long-term pain. So this is what a lot of addiction is. Short-term gain. It's the other way. Short-term gain. So I feel good when I yell at my daughter, you shouldn't be doing this. And I raise my voice. I feel good. But the long-term pain is she's not going to trust you anymore. She's not going to come to you anymore. You're driving a wedge between your family. Maybe it drives a wedge between the other siblings or your wife or your partner for this dad. So the short-term gain is I get to yell and feel good, feel like the big person in the room. The long-term pain is the damage it causes in our life. A lot of our addiction, I mean, food, the short-term gain is I feel numb when I eat. It immediately takes away all of my pain and anxiety. It's done. I feel, and it gives me permission to sit on the couch and watch TV. So those two addictions are really close in my mind. So the food gives me short-term gain for long-term pain. Obesity, I have health issues that I'm reactive to food. Beyond addiction, I have allergies. So long-term pain. Long-term pain. And I can't fix that just by knowing about it. Knowing about it's not going to change anything because I'm powerless. The solution that has worked for me are these 12 steps. Recognizing I'm powerless over with the dad. I am the father who listens. That's a prayer. To hold on to becoming the father who listens. I get chills when I think of that, when I remember that. I am the father who listens. He's not that right today, but maybe with power could become the father who listens. This is the transformation of this work. I'm powerless to become the father who listens. There is a power. Is there a power in this unit? Of course, right? Can that power handle? And the power can be my inner voice. Can it handle my life? Of course. I'm powerless. There is a power. And just for today, I'm going to let go of trying to fix it myself. I'm going to lean in to this guidance. I don't just lean into anything. I don't lean into you or my sponsor or my doctors. I lean in to this inner resource, this inner wisdom. So we need to be praying. We need to be pausing. We need to be listening so I can hear that guidance.
Thank you, Joanne. Another question we had was, this person said, I had many secrets. How do I condense them into one word?
Yeah. So secrets are often accompanied by shame, right? So the secrets and the shame. So looking at what, if you have many, many secrets, if you're new, you don't condense them. But the point to the word is, so maybe I misunderstood. The reason we use one word is because if you imagine digging a trench, we get entrenched, that whole word entrenching, we get stuck in we're digging a hole for ourselves. That happens in my mind. The more often, and this is maybe a bit of outside wisdom, but the more often I retell my what you're calling secrets, the more often I retell this story, the deeper I get entrenched in them, the more power they have over me. The more, so I don't want to, we don't go into our disease unprotected. Like, you know, I need, I don't get into the fighting ring alone with my disease. If I go into a long-winded story on these secrets, I'm engaging in alone in a fighting ring against my addiction, against the shame, against the guilt. I'm going to lose. I will lose. So if you have many secrets or it feels overwhelming, the point to the word is just a prompt for you to remember what it is. That's it. So you maybe don't need much of a prompt. It's just like just something to remind you of what it is. And when you come to be with that sponsor and you're doing a fifth step, you don't have to tell them. And it's not always healthy to tell them That sponsor is volunteering and they don't always know how to handle what's going on that might be very important for you. Like they're volunteering, they're not a professional. So for some of us, our shame and our secrets and our dishonesty is very important to let go of, but it might need outside help. So for the sponsor, I would just say, this is coming up for me and I'm getting some help around it. And I just, that's it. And you don't go into detail with them. Maybe you get some help from the outside help. But remember that entrenchment that goes on when you retell that, retelling stories doesn't work so great for us in 12-step because it keeps us locked in the past. So we just want to talk about, we want to acknowledge it, but we want to find our way out. These inventories are a way of finding ourselves out. So I would approach those secrets with a wise fellow or a professional using the same method I just showed you today, resentment, fear, and our sex conduct. Hopefully it comes up in one of those. Use a similar method, a similar worksheet.
Thanks so much, Joanne. It's now 10 minutes to the hour, and sadly, that's our Q&A time has come to an end. Thank you so much, Joanne, and I'll now hand the meeting back over to our chairperson, Hannah. Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Debbie, and thanks, Joanne. So, seventh tradition, according to our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. As we have now moved to virtual meetings, it's important that we continue to be fully self-supporting. This allows iReaders Anonymous to continue to carry the message to those who still suffer. You are able to send your donations through our website at www.ad4l.info. For those of you able to see the Zoom chat, the link will also be posted there. Thank you all for your support. It is appreciated. Next meeting, a reminder that A Design for Living Big Book OA is a daily meeting. We are based out of Melbourne, Australia. The recording from today's workshop will be available from our website, where you can also find out about other upcoming events and speakers. So you can visit our website again at www.ad4l.info. And our next monthly speaker series will be on the 13th of July. And the topic will be step 5, 6, and 7. We hope to see you there. In closing, I would like to thank you all for your service and coming here today. By following the 12 steps, attending meetings regularly, and using the OA tools, we are changing our lives. You'll find hope and encouragement in iReaders Anonymous. To the newcomer, we suggest attending at least 6 different meetings to learn the many ways OA can help you. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please remember our commitment to honour each other's anonymity. What you hear here, whom you see here, when you leave here, let it stay here. And let's all reach out by phone or email to the newcomers, returning members, and to each other. Together we get better. To close the meeting, will Mickey please unmute and read the promises? And I will ask you to unmute in case you can't.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mickey, compulsive eater. I am absent today. And the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. From Alcoholics Anonymous, page 83.